following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
This episode from Radio Land brought to you by our friends at Central Barbecue. Oh my goodness, it is so fantastic. As it, you know, we talk about it every week. We make mention of it. You need to go and get you some of that that slow smoke Memphis goodness. Those of you in Memphis know where they are. There's three locations. You can find them at cbqmemphis.com. Those of you outside of Memphis that want to have it, hey, those of you in San Francisco want to have some Memphis barbecue, you can do it. You can order it at cbqmemphis.com. We sent some to some friends in New York, and by goodness, they were so excited about getting it too. They'll be getting it next week. So a little treat for them on the way. But in the meantime, you can always get it. Put the taste of the South right in your mouth, as they say. There's a sign in one of the places that says, eat or we both go hungry. You need to do that. Take care of Central Barbecue. They take care of you. That slow-smoked Memphis goodness. Get the ribs, the pork, the sauces, the spices. It's all there. Find them, cbqmemphis.com, or look for their banner ad at our website at radio-memphis.com. Let's get on with the show. Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland. We've done so many of them, I've sort of lost count. This is episode 116. I'm getting to the point now where I'm having to, like, take notes, because there's a lot going on. We got a big show for you this time out, including some music, as we always do. But this is a little bit different. We're doing this. This actually occurred on the radio at radio-memphis.com during the show that I do with my good friend Jeff Janowitz. He and I host a show on Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. Central called Booze and Blues. Yeah, it's about blues. It's blues music. And we always have somebody in, or we try to have somebody in as much as we can. And this time was no different. A couple of weeks back, we had our good friend Mr. Butch Mudbone, and Cash McCall was in the studio. Cash is somebody we've been wanting to talk to for a long time. Cash is a guy who came from Chess Records. He's going to tell those stories there. He's going to drop some names that you're just going to freak out when you hear them. He was taught by Willie Dixon. Yeah. He wrote some hit music for various artists. He had a hit, his best known for his 1966 R&B hit, When You Wake Up. McCall's long career seen him evolve in musical styles from gospel to soul to the blues, which is what he's doing these days. And he's got a great story to tell, and a lot of it is how to get screwed by your record label. He pulls no punches, and it was an impressive conversation, of which we'll get to here in just a moment. But before we get to that, I wanted to tell you about this. We've been in the process of fixing some equipment. We had a couple of microphone processors in our studio that just crashed, and I had to order these things, and it took me a while to get them. And in the process, we had to use our backup facilities, which isn't great, but it did the job. So it's going to be a little noisy. It's going to sound a little different, but I mean, it's not noisy. There was a fan in the room, not a, hey, bro, how you doing? Love your stuff. It wasn't one of those fans. It was an actual, you know, fan that we had in there to help keep one of the computers cool. And it got a little noisy. It got in on the act, but it was fun. You'll be able to hear just fine. It's wonderful. Just wanted to hip you to it, because it will sound remarkably different. And thankfully, we've gotten all this fixed, so we won't have to deal with that anymore. And we've got some other signal improvements that are coming too, which are going to be fantastic. So without any further ado, we're going to play this part. This is part one. Part two will be next week. You'll hear about that coming up shortly. Plus, you'll hear some music from Butch and Cash as they tell the story about getting into the blues and how they got screwed by the blues and why they still play. It's a fantastic story, and it happens right now here from Radioland.
I've been working on that other stuff I've been writing.
We don't even really need to be here today.
No, we don't. No, not really. No, that'd be fine, really.
It's okay.
We can go over to the bar across the street there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let these guys just tear it up for the night.
Tell you what, man, just what they were doing off air, which, by the way, our own Avril Conway was just periscoping, I heard.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Does that mean that if you missed it, it's gone? Or
No, it's still there for 24 hours.
And you can also direct it over to Catch, and they'll save every periscope.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, how do they get to that, Avril?
K-A-T-C-H. If you have to do is hashtag the periscope with Catch, And it'll go right to it.
And for those of you that don't know what we're talking about,
selective morals.
It's like tomorrow.
Butch Mudbone and Cash McCall were just jamming out in here, just playing a little slow blues tune.
Yeah, they were playing a tune, and I remarked that Tony Green had done a version of that, and I asked Cash if he'd written it, and you said yes, but you've written a lot of tunes. And you got started, let's back up a little bit, you got started with Chess Records, is that right?
Chess Records, well, before that, it was Wonderful Records.
Wonderful Records.
And my friend Otis Clay, I were in a gospel group called the Gospel Songbirds.
Yeah.
And Otis, what happened? Otis, we did something, and Monk Higgins, I wrote a song for Otis called That's How It Is When You Love or something. I can't remember. But I wrote the song for him. A friend of mine named Albert Jones came up with a line. He said, please somebody take the hand and slap some sense in me. And that was it.
Yeah.
And I said, I was thinking about that. I said, what are you going to do with it? He said, that's a song. I said, no kidding. But that's all he could come up with.
Yeah.
So he left and went back to Cleveland, I think it was. So I'm sitting up there thinking one day, please somebody take your hand and clap some sense in me. I'm blind or something and I can't see. I've got this woman, she's messing my mind around. She knows that I love her, still she's trying to put me down. And so it came in my head. So when Otis heard it, he said, I want to do that song. Say, okay. So I finished putting the song together. We go down to Wonderful. Monk Higgins, I almost remember who all was playing on it, but there's me. We record the song, and bam, it's an R&B hit record for us.
Wow. Hmm. Just so, like that. Just easy.
Just like that. Which I never got paid for either.
Yeah, you've written so many tunes, and that's all now water under the bridge at this point, isn't it?
Pretty much. I'm still fighting, but, you know, just a voice crying in the wilderness at this point.
Was it just the deals that were worked out back in those days? Is that how that worked?
Well, actually, the first contracts he gave me were pretty good because Willie and Sonny Long Gone Thompson had told me, listen, son, anybody comes up with a contract, they gave me this place to go.
Yeah.
What was his name? Alvin, get the man's name. Alvin Beecham. So he was right on the office on 47th and South Park, had an office there. And he had partners all over the place that dealt in music.
Yeah.
All your friends are here.
Yeah.
So when I got the contract, the first one, Phil Chess, now he sent me a first contract. I'm up there working on a song in the little office they gave me. And here comes Monk Higgins. He stuck his name he didn't stick his name on the Otis Clay song, but the next song he stuck his name on.
Uh-huh.
That I wrote.
That you did.
Yeah, which was a hit record for me. And so, what happened? Oh, he comes up to the room where I was working, and he brings a contract. In fact, some of the South Shore Commission musicians were in the room with me. Sidney, he's passed away. David is still living in California. He's doing real good, the bass player. And Ham's in California.
Right.
Anyway, Monk Higgins come in here. Give me this paper. Sign this. And Sonny and Long Gone Thompson, they told me, you don't jump up to sign anything because somebody give it to you.
Right.
They told me this. So I'm looking at this. He said, sign this right now. Put your name down. And I said, I'm not going to do that. What do you mean you're not going to do it? I'm not going to do it. Look, man, I'm wasting time with you. Sign this contract. I said, I'm not going to do it. And he got all mad and stuff. Dumb people, you know, walking out of the office and stuff. And Sidney, David is still alive. And Sidney, when he was alive, they looked at me and said, man, don't ever sign no dumb stuff like that.
Right.
And they were some of the great players in Chicago at that time. They came from Washington. I said, man, older guys here done warned me, don't jump up and do that. I'd already been through that with Wonderful Records.
Sure.
Signed the contract. It was 1 year contract with Wonderful, though. Sometimes they had 2 year contracts. We're in the 60s now, early 60s. So it's funny. Guys, you had guys, Sonny Long Gone Thompson, remember him? He had mm-hmm. that great record on T-Board, Long Gone. We're talking about the 50s.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he used to produce this woman, Lulu Reed.
Lulu Reed, yes.
Yeah, Sonny did all the music and stuff. And he goes back to Ralph Bass. Him and Ralph Bass worked at King Records. And they did Hank Ballard and a whole lot of people.
The Midnighters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sonny Long Gone, he was a musician to the max. And Willie was Willie. But I had guys like that tell me, look, son, this is a bad situation. And you don't want to get into it. Don't jump up and sign nothing. You don't know what it is.
Absolutely.
And they told me the lawyer where he was. Even Willie called him on the phone. Sonny called him, too. So they got a young guy coming up there with some papers that he wants you to look over before he signed. And I had no money, right? So the lawyer, he just looked at me, come on in here, boy. Let me look at this, what you got here. So he started reading it. I'm sitting there. He said, nah, I'm going to send this off to his guy in Nashville. What's his man's name? I forgot it. But he sent it to him. This guy was really good. Now, this guy was from over in Europe somewhere.
Right.
And he was up in New York. What happened to him? And he was kind of honest. And he got it. He got his head almost handed to him.
Wow.
Meanwhile, his daughter was going to college in Nashville, some big, huge football player. And the guy beat her up.
Oh, no.
A lot of mess in the guy's life. So he moved to Nashville to, you know, see his daughter's welfare and stuff. So that's how Alvin knew him from somewhere else. But anyway, he sent the contracts to him. So the first contract was actually pretty good. But he said, always bring it to me so we find out what it says. So that was a 5-year contract. So guess what? Sometime in 74, and I signed the second contract, which was funny because the first one hadn't run out yet. Almost a year before the first one runs out, he comes with another contract. I said, here, sign this, cash. No, no, no. Give it to me. Let me take it to the people to read it.
Yeah.
So I take it back to Mr. Beecham. He sends this one off. I got the guy's name at home. And guess what? Come back 5 years. Cool. 5 years is over. All your songs go to you. After the 5 years.
After the 5 years, yes.
Phil Chess comes to me one day. I'm getting ready to go to California to play for Minnie Riperton and her band. So they great money they offered me, too.
Oh, yeah.
And, man, got me a beautiful apartment and everything. Minnie was a sweetheart to me. Her and her husband, Dickie Rudolph. They treated me great. So get me a beautiful place to stay. Ah! I'm living on High Street, guy. So I'm getting ready to go, and Phil Chess comes to me one day. Look, Cash, we got some trouble with your contracts. What are you talking about? I know when they end and stuff like that. Yeah, but you want to get paid, don't you? There's something in there we need to straighten out. Young and dumb me, right?
Right.
I said, look, man, things I've been hearing about you guys, don't trust you. Look, most of these people don't know what the hell they're talking about. I said, well, a lot of them seem kind of convinced you guys ain't paying people and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, look, Cash, haven't I been nice to you? I said, you've been okay. You know, I say, hey, we get on so far. Well, look, you want to get paid, we need to see those contracts. I never had no major trouble with them. So when I get my contract back, oh, Gene will send them to you next week. Gene Goodman, right?
Yeah.
Now, I got to remember, Gene Goodman's name was on the contracts. So guess what? He gets my contracts. I'm doing something. Oh, I'm getting ready to go to California to start rehearsing with Minnie because she's set to go on the road in a month or so. So I'm getting packed up and getting ready to go. And I remember, Huck, he passed away. He said, man, what about your contracts? I said, right. So I go by Chess and I said, hey, you should have my contracts back by now. Well, I don't have them now. Gene Goodman's got your contracts. I said, no kidding. But I knew someone right then. I looked at him, wouldn't look me in the eye. I said, okay. So I went on to California. Many of them, they kept their word. I had a beautiful place to stay, everything. So I called Gene Goodman while I'm in California. I said, hey, when are you going to send me my contract? He said, what? And he starts laughing. And then he said, they use the word a lot. He said, you niggas are unbelievable. I said, what are you talking about? He said, Phil got your contracts. I said, yeah, he said he was sending them to you.
Yeah.
He said, unbelievable. Unbelievable. So all them years, I went to, what's his name? Jack Mondes' friend, Al Shapiro.
Yeah.
In California. Got to know him through many in there. So many had been through some changes with them. That's why they couldn't wait to get away from Chess.
Oh, I bet.
They couldn't wait. You know, she did that first album with him, and she wanted out, and Big Rudolph wanted his wife gone.
Yeah.
Now, see, they didn't trust Chess under any circumstances. So they got a deal with Epic Records, which Come to My Garden. She recorded that on there, which was a big hit record for her. But we're out there playing, and so what happened? Anyway, I called him. Oh, they turned me on to Alan Shapiro, so Alan Shapiro writes them a letter. This is in 1976. Guess what? Didn't hear a word from him.
Mm.
Not a word. So, let me tell you something. I just went on every time I'd see a lawyer. But they got all the main lawyers pretty much tied up. And everybody knows how crooked they are. So, hey, all this time comes, finally, the guy that handled Willie Dixon's case and Muddy's case, he gets into it. Now, the guy who argued the case for Willie was, what's his name, Joe Hart.
Joe Hart, yeah.
Now, he was partners with this guy, Alan Shapiro, no, what was his name, Jerry Weinstein. Jerry Weinstein.
Oh, yes.
Well, Jerry Weinstein, he was the lawyer in Willie's and Muddy's case, but his partner, what's his name, Joe Hart,
yeah,
argued the case. And Willie had passed on by then, but his daughter and his wife was there. And Shirley told me, says, guys, the cat argued the case brilliant. And Art bagged off. But he comes back in the room and tells Marie and Shirley that he didn't think it was right, that he was arguing for them to be paid the money that had been stolen from him.
Mm-hmm.
And Shirley said, I looked at him and said, you out of your mind? These people been stealing from my father for many years. So she argued the case, and she told me on the phone. She heard that I shouldn't use the guy. She said, Cash, watch him. He's a crook. And she told me about the situation with Willie. So I'm not knowing that. I said, what the devil am I going to do? So he takes the case. Meanwhile, Jerry Weinstein died. Nobody calls me to tell me.
Oh, God.
So, and this cat, when I called up there, I heard it, and called to speak. When I found out Jerry Weinstein was dead, I called up there, and he answered the phone, Joe Hart. I said, I'm calling for Mr. Weinstein. And he said, dry as all that, he's dead. I said, no kidding. And he said, I've taken over your case. I said, you've taken over my case? Without even calling me to tell me, we can talk about it. Well, I've taken over the case. We've come this far. So guess what? What year was this in? Oh, 1998. I called checking on my case because Jerry Weinstein, before he died, mm-hmm, had told me, we're getting your court date ready. I said, cool. So funny. I call him trying to check on my court date. And he tells me, well, your court date's no longer. I said, no kidding. I said, you just now telling me? He said, no, I'll be in Memphis tomorrow. So he comes to Memphis and tells me. So he's at the, what's the famous Memphis hotel where the Ducks are?
The Peabody.
Yeah, okay. Peabody.
He checks into the Peabody. I go down there to get him. And funny, they stop me at the desk. I have to call up to his room, right? So I call up there and say, hey, I'm here. So I'm figuring, go up to the room and see where the court going to be. So he says, well, come to the back of the hotel and pick me up. In the back. Why? I figured it all out after. He didn't want nobody to see him with me. And then I go and pick him up. And then he tells me, we got to go to Nashville. And I tell him, I said, that ain't what Mr. Weinstein told me. He said it was going to be in California, right there where you guys come from. What's the place next door to L.A.? Santa Monica.
No, in Santa Monica, yeah.
He said, no, it's going to be in Nashville. And from there, it was all downhill because when we stopped at the White Castle, he all of a sudden wants to drive. I knew where the court, I'd played in Nashville for 20 years. I knew where everything was there.
Sure.
In fact, the drummer that we used came, Chucky. You remember Chucky?
Oh, Chucky Burke?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Lived in Nashville.
Played with Skip James. And all
there you go. Yeah. So he insists on driving, right? So I let him drive, and he's going all over everywhere to confuse me. Well, I was 59 or 60, but to confuse me, right? And he did confuse me. And we go to this little old place, ain't no old courthouse. In a little kind of rundown building, white building with green writing on it. Or was it green with white? I can't remember. But anyway, it wasn't no court building. And we go in there, nobody's in there, desk all turned over and stuff, and I'm looking around, and this big guy comes. Look, we want you to sit here. So they got two long tables put together, put me at the head of the table with my chair facing this other guy, right?
Right.
This guy, he had black hair. It was all crooked from the get. Then he comes up. He's about 6 feet from me. My eyes aren't that good, right? And he's holding a paper up. Is this your signature? I'm looking. Can't hardly make it out. I said, kind of looks like it. Is this your signature? I said, it looks like it, but I can't see it. And he said, look, you answer my question. I said, hey, man, I can't hardly see. Is this your signature? He said, you don't answer me, I'm going to call the police. And when he says that, his hand is waving. He's got his hand over there half hit from him, but he's waving it. And when I turn around to see what the devil he's waiting at, down the table on his big typewriter is this guy typing, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying, what the devil? I saw that, and Joe Hart, meanwhile, gets nervous. I said, why don't he call the police? Maybe they can see what kind of mess is going on here.
Right.
Then he starts, look, whoa. They talk down the table, and I hear him say this guy. They know I couldn't hear good, right? He says, you got what you need. Hmm? And then all of a sudden, he's in a hurry to go. The guy who was at the Peabody.
Oh,
he's in a hurry to go. So we get to this gas station on the outside of Nashville, and then I got to go in there and use the restroom. What he went in there to make a call back to this guy. But guess what? My court date comes, I'm not even called for it. Hmm?
Why?
Then they sent me these forged contracts with my signature supposedly on.
Got three different lawyers holding hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there it is. That's what I've been through.
That's what happens when you don't get paid.
Amen.
That's how that happens.
And don't worry, in chess, one of the worst reputations in art music.
Yeah.
Art music. A book out of the Bible.
Yes.
Art. One of the, what do they call art? Art was a... Ark. The Ark. The Holy Ark.
Ark of the Covenant.
The Ark of the Covenant. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Ark music, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think of it using something out of the Bible. You wouldn't think it would be used to the crooked mold that
is. Yeah, but they will now, won't they?
Ooh, Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they got to make it look right, you know.
Look here. And so many people, man. All those New Orleans cats that they were recording back in the day. I saw what they did, Jimmy Reed, but Pygmy Marcus.
Yeah.
Now, that was the funny one. They had this lady working there named Dot Lane. Dot had been with them since they started in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew all the business. She typed up all stuff, and she did royalty payments and all that stuff. She was sort of like knew all, everything. Well, it was really funny. Pygmy Marcum comes in. Dot had a good relationship with everybody because she really tried to help most of the black artists there, you know. And she saw a lot of what was going on, so it's really funny. Pygmy comes in. I had written a song. I didn't even know it until the DJ, Dave Matthews, told me.
Oh, yeah.
There's my name right there on Pig's Popcorn, which was a hit record for him.
Yeah.
So anyway, Pig's is there. He's happy. He comes up to the sixth floor where the writers and stuff were, record administration was, and he's all happy. And Pig weighs about 400 pounds.
Right.
He's the color of my man's shirt. Beautiful white teeth. And he used to do, at the Regal Theater, he did comedy. And he was, man, he would blow your mind. He was so hilarious. Pig. And he was that way when he was in chess, right? He'd come up there, good morning. He had this big voice. Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing? You know, funny cat. So... he was all cool, right? He's up on the sixth floor, so I got to go down. We're getting ready to do a more records on him. So I wanted to hear, you know, really what all kind of stuff he did. So I went to the record bar to pick up some records. So they had just given him a royalty check. Chest in their head. So, and Pete was embullied. He was so happy. You know what? I go by Dot. I say, hey, Dot, how you doing? Go to the record vault, get the records on the way back out. And by then, Dot's head is down on the desk. And I can hear Pig's voice. He's in Phil. Leonard had a chest. I had an office here in the center. Phil's office was to the right of his, facing him. And Max Cooperstein was at the last office down that way. And this other guy, I forget his name, he kept all the books and stuff. Well, Pig was in there. You guys aren't paying me. I know you aren't. And he, that big voice is going. And Dot, I'm looking at Dot. She told him, and I found out what she told him. She said, Pig, I'm going to tell you something, but don't tell nobody I told you.
Yeah.
Well, Dot knew all of the secrets there. She knew where all the money was going and how the money was being lifted. So Pig had told her, I'm not going to say a word. And they, Bill and Leonard just got him in there. Look, Pig, somebody had to tell you something. We just gave you a big check. And that's all the royalty you got coming. Pig, no, it ain't. Y'all going to pay me. And boy, he was sweating, man. And he was big, boy. Sweat was going everywhere. And boy, that big boy as he had, he was great on comedy, guys.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Well, I wish you would have got a chance to see him. Man, he'd have you rolling in the aisles. He was so funny. But anyway, he's mad, man, spit everything. And I'm sitting outside, dog. I'm just watching this. And then it just jumped. Pig, why would you want our best-selling artists? Why would we want to mess with you like that? Y'all doing it. You ain't giving me all the money that you owe me. Pig, that's all the money you got coming. No, it ain't. And then Phil Chester's up there. Pig, somebody tell you we're not treating you right. Yes, but he wouldn't tell him who. Huh. Come on, Pig. Who said this? Who's sitting up on this mess like that? Now, Pig, come on. Tell us. I ain't got nothing to say. Come on, Pig. And poor Dot, I look at poor Dot. She, her head's down on that desk. And they just keep pushing. Pig, somebody's trying to destroy our relationship. What's going on? Dot Lane told me that's who. And poor Dot. And I'm sitting there watching this. I said, well, there it is.
No.
There it is. And but you know what? They didn't touch Dot Lane because she knew all that dirt.
She knew where all the bodies were buried.
Yeah, she knew where everybody was buried.
Yeah.
Finally, she got a job up in Atlanta, Georgia. She was working there. We went there to, what was it? We was cutting somebody. That group, ISIS. You remember that group, ISIS at all?
You know,
it's an unfortunate name now.
Yeah, of course, I'm thinking of something completely different when you say
ISIS. You guys are young. I'm going way back here. Well, anyway. It was a mess, but anyway, Dot was working for this company, and Sidney Barnes was trying to cut some, so he took a bunch of amateur musicians trying to go in there and cut. That didn't work out too well, you know, and Sidney should have knew better as long as he'd been in the business, but we were there. Minnie was playing at this beautiful club, all mirrors and stuff, and Isis was the opening act, and Sidney gonna take Isis' horn player. Here, guys, I'm running my mouth. Look at you.
No. Keep going.
Well, it was some funny stuff I saw happening, man, in up at Chess, and a lot of very unfair stuff. And a lot of people won't talk about it, but hey, I can talk about it because that day I saw a lot of it.
You lived through it. That's part of the experience of your career. I mean,
well, let me ask you this. At the time, did you get, I mean, I know at that point, well, Chess had been around a good decade or so,
mm-hmm.
right?
Starting in the 50s.
Was it one of those things like, hey, if you'd just been here a few years ago, you missed out on all this? Or you know, I mean, I guess at that point, Chess knew the influence they had, right? It wasn't.
Well, guess what? They were taking all that royalty money that they were lifting.
Right.
They owned 5 radio stations at one point. Huh?
Right.
Wow. WNOV in Milwaukee, WBON in Chicago, plus they had a couple of FM stations. Oh, yeah. they were making Grand Theft.
Well, I guess how much of that, like when you got the nod to, hey, come work at Chess Records, how much of that did you know you were getting into?
I didn't know anything about it.
It was, yeah.
What happened?
For you, it was like, man, this is living the dream, right? This is...
Well, I had a hit record with St. Lawrence Records.
Right, right. That was before Chess, before yeah. this, before all that.
Monk Higgins got a job at St. Lawrence Records. This little guy owned an insurance company, St. Lawrence Insurance or something, and so he wanted to be in the music business. He figured he'd go like Chess. They started a small label
yeah.
and turned it into a multi-million dollar thing. So he same thing. He starts him a little label, and guess what? Now that boy played guitar with Ray Charles, Freddie Robinson?
Yes, yes.
He ended up first record on there. First record of his own hit record. I'm forgetting the name of it, but it was a hit record for him. Oh, they called me the creeper because I tiptoed when I walked. So, oh, I know
yeah,
that was
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
It was a hit record for him, and Mamie P. Galore did Mamie, a song called It Ain't Necessary.
Yeah.
That was all on St. Lord.
I worked with her in Belzona.
There you go. Yeah, and then Mamie here come girl. My dumb self. I record a song called When You Wake Up There. That was a hit record. Out of the box. Eddie Thomas, who used to be with the Curtis and Curtis, what's the name in the what's the name? Curtis Mayfield.
Mayfield.
Curtis
what
Mayfield.
Oh, shit.
Curtis Mayfield and the, oh, God.
I can't remember.
But that group.
And the orchestra, yeah. right? It was, a, huh? was the Curtis Mayfield Orchestra?
It may have been the Curtis Mayfield Orchestra.
No, it was Curtis Mayfield, the group.
Yeah.
People get ready, there's a train to come.
Yeah. Right.
The Impressions.
The Impressions.
There you go. Well, I lived through a lot of stuff. I saw a lot of stuff. But anyway, guys, I'm just getting run. I'm missing myself.
No, that's quite all right. Look, you are telling a part of musical history that a lot of people don't know about. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And the pitfalls that you went through yeah. and all that they're still there.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's
oh, yeah.
the thing.
They're worse now. Actually, they're yeah, worse yeah. now because
you would think they would have learned their lesson by not screwing these musicians over, but they don't. Because Jeff, you said this before. The problem that a musician has is that the second you write a song or, yeah. or record something, all these hands are sticking out there going,
"Oh yeah,
pay me."
There it is.
Yeah, if you want to get yeah. you want this album to play on the X number of radio stations, it's going to cost
yeah.
you. It's gonna
payola,
cost you.
Yeah.
If you want us to
promote it.
Yep. The hands up.
You got to pay us to sell it.
The studio time is the cheapest part of the whole process, man.
Oh, hell,
you know, even the DJs in Chicago, funny. You in the studio, they hear the song. They used to come through there all the time, you know, watch the sessions and stuff. And, you had to tell the DJ, you're going to play my record. He says, you take care of me, I'll play it.
Right, yeah.
And
at least that's straightforward, though, right? I mean,
that's the way it was. I mean, that's the way it was.
It's still like that.
It is.
Well, you know what? Yeah. It's such a mess now because who are the gatekeepers?
Yeah,
you
right.
got no gatekeepers.
There are no gatekeepers.
There are no gatekeepers.
Really not. I mean, honestly, I think that's why we've seen kind of a resurgence in the blues here just locally.
Well, and there's a big shift in the industry, too, between death of AM and FM radio.
Right.
You know, at the hands of what we're doing here. And you have labels getting smaller and smaller and smaller now. It becomes a little easier to police it.
But, you know, the artist has to be a much more of a... You can't just be a singer, songwriter, performer. You've got to kind of understand the business. Because you have to be your own manager. Because nobody else, you know...
Nobody's going to help.
There's no label that's going to give you... Hey, we'll give you $15,000 to market your new album. That's not happening anymore.
No.
It's really on your own shoulders. And that's tough.
Give me $10,000 for studio money.
John Burton. The Black Laureate, Chess, right?
Right.
It's funny, it's funny. All the artists that they sign and stuff like that, we got a lawyer for you.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Use our guy. Yeah. Seriously. He won't fuck you, I promise. He's always been good to us. He's going to be good to you, I promise.
Yeah. But they caught Max Cooperstein in something. So he's going to use John Burton,
right,
the company lawyer, in his suit. And so guess what? It's really funny. The judge getting ready to pass sentence down on Max Cooperstein. And John Burton still sitting up there, ain't said a word. Finally, the judge getting ready to pass sentence on him. And Max Cooperstein jumped up, wait a minute, Judge, Your Honor. And John Burton still ain't said a word. It was ridiculous.
Oh,
they had him there, supposed to be the lawyer. It was really strange, so they could get you, you know, get you, you can check with John Burton about your contract and stuff.
Right.
But guess what? You were just stepping in a bigger pile of
right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I saw it all. I saw a lot of artists, man, get done really bad.
What a mess. Let me grab a break here. We'll come back. We'll chat some more. We'll play some.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We're on till like 11. You can hang tonight. You can stay all night with us. You got some place to be.
5 years old. Me, I usually hang for an hour and then go home and go to bed. I'm going to hang as long as
as long as you want to, you're welcome to stay as late as you'd like.
Well, bless you.
Remind me to tell you the story about him and Bill Perry.
All right.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I got to talk to you about you played on your 1987 album. Mm-hmm. You play with one of my favorite bass players of all time, Nathan East.
Nathan, oh, you know
Nathan? Yeah, I don't know him personally. I wish I did. He's a legend to me. But
I would love
to talk to you about that. Yeah. So
there's one other guy there that kind of rivals Nathan East. His name is Welton Guyte.
Welton Guyte. I don't know.
Teetotal monster on the bass.
Really?
Woo!
What about Willie Weeks?
Oh, Willie Weeks, man. I almost forgot. Boy, I'm glad, Bone. You really. Willie Weeks. Super bad. Last time.
But he was on that album with Nathan East, right? Like they.
Well, they have did some things together.
Yeah.
But Willie Weeks was playing with, what's the girl? The from Nashville? Winona Judd.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that's how great he was. But before her, he was playing with Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
He was one of the originators of that slap.
Yeah.
Style. Nathan East was doing that. Was it something forever? The fusion band with Chick Corea.
Oh yes.
Return to Forever.
Monster bass player Nathan East. Real cool guy, too.
Yeah.
Got his own airplane.
Yes.
Me flying it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't fly with him.
He can play that bass, so.
Yeah, he's a good friend of, what's his name, Richard Ejitsi's, too.
Who that?
It's not
Richard Ejitsi.
Oh, I didn't know.
Ranger in California. Gosh. She did that Cash Up Front album.
Foreplay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
Foreplay.
A great album.
Foreplay.
And you ought to hear that there's a video on YouTube with Cash and Minnie Riperton where they're doing a call and response kind of thing.
Yeah.
Man, it's incredible.
Cash, you playing much these days? You working a few clubs here? You got any standing
gigs?
Every
now and then, let me see, one, two, I got to go do that, what is that vessel over there in Arkansas?
Oh, King Biscuit?
Yeah, doing that, and also I got to go to Chicago and do something for the United Nations next month.
Yeah. Gotta go do something for the United Nations next month.
His niece has booked that. Going there and do that, I don't understand what it is, but hey.
Hey, why not?
Hey,
go there and play it, playing for a bunch of different countries and different stuff, and it's for children, so hey, I'm up for that.
That's a good deal.
Sounds like a pretty good deal.
Something else I'm supposed to do, I can't remember.
Well, hopefully it wasn't tonight.
Yeah, hopefully.
They'll call him.
They'll call him
the day before.
Yeah, day before. You know.
You ready to catch a plane? Huh?
What?
You know what? My good friend here for so many years, he's so cool. He keeps everything organized up there.
He does. Yeah, Butch has got it figured out. Yeah. You guys are sitting over here noodling around a little bit and playing some sweet sounds, too.
I was going to tell you about the little thing that happened, what is it, 3 years ago, I guess it was. I was playing at the Juke Joint Festival down in Clarksdale.
Yes, sir.
And after I finished playing there, they wanted me to play at the Hobson Plantation.
Yeah.
So we went over there. Cash come along, and I had Vic Charles playing bass with me. I played with Albert King for a bunch of years. And Cash said, hey, man, let me get up and play a couple on the bass with you. I said, yeah, come on, man. So he gets up on the bass, and we're playing, and we're kind of getting into it and having a good time. And we kind of run over our time a little bit. And the next band that was coming up, this piano player get up there while we was just starting to pack up. And he sounded pretty good on the piano while he was just warming up. And I got up and said, ladies and gentlemen, how about a big round of applause for Cash McCall over here sitting in on bass. And he stopped doodling around on the piano, and he said, is that really Cash McCall? I said, yeah. Yeah, sure is. He says, oh, you got to be kidding me. He says, my dad knows him. So he goes over and gets on the phone. It turns out 40 years ago, him and Cash, Bill Howlin' Mad Perry and Cash left to Chicago together.
Oh, wow.
And when they got to Chicago, Cash wound up going over there with Chess, and Bill Perry wound up going off with somebody else. And see, now I met Cash out in L.A. when I was with Johnny Otis, with the Johnny Otis show. So 40 years later, here come Bill Perry comes over there, and him and Cash sitting there eating crawfish, having a 40-year reunion.
Oh, that's beautiful, though.
Yeah, the world is so small.
Yeah, it is. It's getting smaller all the time.
Yes, yes Lord. Indeed. Hadn't seen that boy in a long time, and had never seen his daughter, Shy. I knew his son, but the boy had been growing up there. I'm saying, my goodness. It was good to see old Billy. I hadn't seen him in a long time. The last time I saw him, this gospel group, the Salem Travelers, he was producing a session on them at Universal Studio.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew the Salem Travelers. In fact, I turned Billy on to, what was that man's name? Because he had wanted me to do that group, and I couldn't do it. And he said, man, is there anybody who could possibly help me? I said, I got a young friend that I know that's really good in the studio, very knowledgeable and stuff. And Billy was. So I turned him on to Billy. Billy went in that studio, cut the greatest record the Salem Travelers ever had. And he wrote most of the songs. He's a good writer, mm-hmm. especially on the gospel. And so, hey, that guy was so happy. But things like that, you go through things like that. And Billy always, you know, the other day he was saying, Cash did this for me and did that for him. But people can say that all they want to, but it's impossible to do anything if a person has the talent and the will. Yep. That's when it makes sense for you to say, hey, give this cat a shot. Right?
Yeah.
He can handle it.
Yeah.
Right.
I was that way when I first saw his buns.
And then, you know, two weeks ago, our bass player, Cecil McDaniel, he had a party he had been contracted to do for a couple of 3 months, you know, and he said, I can't make Saturday night. I said, who am I going to get? So I tried to get Vic. No, he's working. I tried a couple other people, John Williams and some others that play bass. I said, man, who can I get a hold of? And then I just happened to think, because we sat in with Gary Burnside at the Tin Roof the other night, I said, Gary plays with Dwayne, his brother, and I called him up. So he came and he played bass on the show with us. And he was telling everybody, I've been knowing Mudbone since I was this big. I first met R.L. Burnside in 71 at the Jazz Fest in New Orleans. And I used to go to his place in Tullahoma and all like that, and him and Junior Kimbrough and sit in with them guys. And now Gary and Dwayne both coming into their own pretty good, the Burnside boys, you know.
That whole family is remarkable.
Oh yeah,
Cedric's new record is just incredible.
I don't know how active you guys are on social media, but have you seen the new blues meme that's going around?
No,
it's a picture of R.L. Burnside. It says "Feeling the Burn."
Oh,
you like the Bernie Sanders campaign?
I like that.
That's good. I like that a lot. Since you guys went through the trouble of bringing some guitars down here, how about we hear a tune?
Wait, before we get into the tune, so last time you were here, Butch, we heard the amazing story about
this guitar.
How it was stolen from you, and it took you years to recover it.
2 years to the day.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's serious mojo. But I'm looking at your guitar, Cash. I want to say there's a story there, but I bet there's an encyclopedia there.
Yeah, there's a book in there. Yeah. I'll tell you what.
Well, this poor girl been through a whole bunch of stuff, man.
Now, what year of Stratocaster is that? Is that a 70s?
63, I think.
63. It's 62 got the big or
63. The cat at Lion and Healy. I'm in a session. I was playing old sitar at Upchurch at Long Beach. So I'm doing this session, some strange kind of session, but a beautiful song. And so the guy from Lion Healy says, Cash, I got something I want you to see. It's 1962 or 63. I said, okay. And so I go down there. As soon as we finish the session, I head on down there. And he goes in the back and he pulls this thing up. It's brand new. And I said, what's so special about it? He said, it's special. He said, they only made a few of these.
Really?
And we got one. And I'll tell you something, the tuning pegs, look at them. This one is broke. But you just stick the string down in it, and guess what? Each one of them's individual. You don't find that anymore.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Each one of these individual. Now I got to get the man that worked on your axe to find me another one of these and fix this up. But look, it's been through.
I know a guy could help you with that if you need.
I need it, my friend. I need it because I want it put back in great shape.
I know a luthier that will go to the ends of the earth to find the exact parts that came on that
car. Beautiful, beautiful.
As long as we don't touch the finish on that thing, because you got to leave that. It's beautiful.
Was that always a wood finish, a natural finish, or was there a color on top of that before?
Well, all the dirt still. Over in Bologna, over in Rome somewhere, we was in this big old-timey theater for the Chicago Blues Legends tour. And man, one of the stagehands is sitting in a guitar stand, and guess what? The cat's walking around dragging a cord and knocks his guitar all the way in the orchestra pit.
It hit concrete and everything.
Oh, guess what? The whole thing happened. It bent one of these things and was still pretty much in tune, this old guitar.
Wow.
That guy, he said, boy, he's talking all the foreign language. I couldn't understand. He said, that's all right, man. That's all right. There's another silver nick on it.
That's a 62?
63, I got it. 63, I think.
Wow.
Guy, Lion Healy, he just held it back for me. And I went and got it. $300 it cost then.
There is so much mojo just emanating from that instrument. It's not even.
You know how much it sells for now? They keep telling me you get about $50 for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you probably buy a new car at least.
You buy a house with that.
Nice yeah. SUV.
Just like
with
it is.
Hey, a Maserati.
Don't ever sell it, Cash.
No, sir.
I'm going to keep this old rag, my man. It's been with me a lot of years.
You guys have a relationship there is what
there
that
you
is.
Go.
Yeah. There's some stories that are still to be told on it.
Such a beautiful sounding guitar.
Oh, it is. It's beautiful.
Beautiful sound. Let's do a song.
Yeah, let's do
something.
Yeah.
Right, let's go into key of G.
All right.
Give us some blues, Bone.
All right.
1, 2, on G. Company. My wife is at home trying to be cool. She knows I'm messing up 'cause she knows that I'm cool. Oh no! listen, I've been messing up about 7 times a week. Man, let me tell you, it's soon enough killing me. But I had a lot of practice. Know what I'm talking about? Guess what? Cheating is like a ball game. 3 strikes, you're out. But no, I almost messed up my life. Trying to keep a girlfriend, a woman, and a wife. Come on, play it for the boat, hey!
They say when you write a blues tune, you're writing from experience. Are we looking into a little chapter of your life there, Cash?
There it is, baby.
That's all you got to say.
So Milton, how did you end up with these two guys?
Oh!
I got to know.
Well, like I was saying earlier, I met Bush in 73, right, Bush?
Yeah, I think around
I've been working with Bush ever since, first 15 years straight, and ever since then, off and on. I had the great...
So it took 15 years for you to get sick of.
A great honor and a pleasure to meet Cash.
Oh, yeah, right about two years ago.
Yeah, a couple years.
I've learned so much just listening to Cash.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah. God,
you know what?
If God could just bless me.
Me and Butch be hanging around. We'd be over there at the Butch's house. Yeah. And Butch be going over songs or something. And he would mention Milton all the time. Now, see... Milton should be here for this. I'm wanting to meet Milton. Every day me and Butch talking, Milton gonna come up. Milton played drums. See,
you give Milton a coffee cup and a spoon, he'll get a beat out of it for you.
There it is, baby. There it is.
Well, he sure took our bucket to a new level.
Heck yeah.
You're gonna have to have him sign it.
We have to have it bronzed. I think at this point.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
We're sitting here with Butch McBone and Cash McCall this evening, having a fine time.
Man, God bless me to be able to see all of these people live.
Otis Spann, I love Otis. Oh,
see him, yeah, be man. One of them. What do you
think? Yeah, I met him too.
How about
he wasn't my favorite. Lafayette Leakes,
yeah.
Sonny Longone Thompson.
Jimmy Dawkins.
Jimmy Dawkins.
You played with Jimmy a little bit, didn't you?
Yep.
George Butler, Wild Child.
I played with Wild Child a lot. Wild Child. Give me tell you something. Wild Child was a problem.
Hey, let's look up his name, Diddy.
Yeah, me and the wife, we heading up, we coming to Alpha at 103rd Street, and we going down Halsted Street because we lived on 135 South Halsted. Yeah. So guess what? I see this guy walking. So yeah, I stop.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
All right, there you go. Part two is coming up next week, as you just heard right here on this program. want to tell you, too, that our good friends over at Wizards have been so kind to us, and they are good people, and you can find them at 1999 Madison Avenue. They're an alternative smoke shop, been around in, here in Memphis for a long time. They've got the, they've got these really crazy shirts and hats. They've got they got some adult novelty stuff. They've got incense. They've got all sorts of fun things. Hell, they've even got the great classic lava lamp. If you want to get one, you can find it there. At Wizards on Madison Avenue here in Midtown Memphis, or for those of you outside the area, you can shop online and get it there as well. Look for them. Look for their banner ad at our website at radio-memphis.com, and take care of Wizards because it's still smoking. All right, guys. I reminded you, I think I said something about it last week. I want to remind you again. Those of you with Android devices can find this show in in the Google Play Store. We have been accepted over there after they asked us to join, and we submitted, and everything was wonderful, and they have us there, so go and be able to download it there. We're also at player.fm, we're at Stitcher, we're at Podbean is the host of the whole thing. We're just in a million places, so just search From Radioland and you'll find us. Just that simple. Plus, if you want to drop us a line, we'd love to hear from you. Radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. That's the email address. Radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. That's it for me this time around. You know what's coming up next time. We'll see you then. Take care of yourselves and take care of one another. And we'll see you then. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.